Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, sports fans, welcome to WRSP Radio's Weekend Sports Huddle with Tom Pollan, Hunter Hodes. I'm Dave Holcomb, back in the host chair. Thanks for bearing with us. Off to a little bit of a late start, a couple minutes late, but we're going to get rolling here. Penguins and Capitals are knotted at two games apiece in their second round series. Game 5 follows the Kentucky Derby Saturday afternoon. To preview Game 5, we have a special guest today, NHL writer and Capitals beat writer Sammy Silver from Sporting News, and the hockey writers will be on in just a few minutes, joining us to talk some hockey. Plenty of storylines in that series. We're going to get to as many of them as we can. In the second half of our show, we're going to discuss the historic night in baseball Friday. A couple of different big things happened, including Albert Pujols joining an exclusive club. But why isn't anybody talking about it? We'll get to that around 10:30, I would say. We're also going to try and get to some Cubs and Pirates. And Ben Roethlisberger speaks out against the Steelers, well, not necessarily against the Steelers taking a quarterback, but definitely had an opinion about Mason Rudolph joining the Steelers roster. So plenty to get to today. We're going to get rolling right now, but I'll introduce my co-host. First, in Virginia, fresh off, I believe it may be his first college exam, one of his first ones, Hunter Hodes. Hunter, how you doing today?
I took a bunch of exams last year at community college, but yeah, I'm dead, guys. I woke up at like 6:45 to go take this exam, and you're lucky I didn't fall back to sleep.
To be honest, I was half expecting you to.
I was probably pretty close. I hear you there, Tom. Tom, not everyone can wake up that early.
Well, let me bring on Tom now. Tom in Chicago clearly has an opinion about Hunter's sleeping habits. Tom, how are you doing today?
Hey, we're doing great. Sunny day, nice out. Looks like spring is finally taking hold in here in Chicago.
Perfect. That's great. Here in Atlanta, we went from winter to summer, basically. There really wasn't much of a spring.
Yeah, I know.
I'm here too. It's been over 80 degrees the whole week, so that makes me happy.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of tough to wear a hockey jersey, though. It's very hot.
Yeah, too hot.
Baseball season.
Yeah. Right, yeah. The ice is melting, it feels like. It's so hot, so... but we will.
There's no more
baseball.
No more outdoor winter classics.
Yeah, not at this time of year.
Yeah,
no.
With the black. Yeah, no more with the Blackhawks in them. That's for sure.
Ooh, Hunter.
Ooh.
Hunter. Have your fun.
I'm sorry.
It ends sooner or later.
Some point.
Mr. Exam Boy.
Well, today's show is brought to you by author Marco Sacchio. Learn the secret of the human mind and the laws of the universe that will guide you towards wealth and health. Learn more at www.marcosacchio.com. And we're just waiting for Sammy to give us a call. We're going to ask her some questions about the Washington Capitals and how they're feeling going into Game 5. I would think with the series tied, guys, the Penguins got to feel like they after winning Game 4, they won the last game. You always feel better about yourself if you're coming off a win in the playoffs. And, you know, they're the more tested team, obviously the defending champs, and the Capitals are still have that they're still on the schneid trying to get past the second round. So, Hunter, how are you feeling about each team's chances moving forward in this series and specifically, how are the Penguins feeling right now with the series tied 2-2?
Well, I think the Penguins are probably feeling pretty good. You could even make a case that they could be up 3-1, actually. And they did blow, but they had that awful third period in Game 3 when Matt Murray allowed a pretty questionable goal with the third goal, and then they blew the lead with just over a minute left. It would have been nice to see what would happen in a potential overtime if it went there. So, I felt like 2-2 was going to happen. One a friend of mine on Twitter posted well before the series. He's like, can we just skip through the first four games and get to the last three? Because we all know it's going to be 2-2. And sure enough, he was pretty right about that. But, of course, if you're the Penguins, you know, you've beaten them twice. You have to beat them 2 out of 3 times. They've done that before against the Capitals. I'm sure they're feeling very good. They know how to win on the road, especially in the playoffs. The Capitals are not a good home team. I was tracking it this morning. If you go back to last year's Penguins-Cap series and fast forward all the way to now, I believe they've lost 6 of the past 9 home games the Caps have at home. Don't quote me on that because my math—I'm not a good math student, so. But I think I got it right.
Is that in the playoffs or is that just overall?
Yes. Yeah, in the playoffs, home games for the Capitals, they've lost 6 of their last 9. Is what I think it comes out to, which is that's sad. You know, I saw someone say, it's going back to D.C., welcome to the jungle. I'm like, welcome to the jungle? Welcome to freaking no home ice advantage is what you really mean. This isn't like CenturyLink Field over here, people, or freaking Winnipeg. But this is a huge game tonight for sure.
Well, Game 5 is always.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, taking control of the series, going up 3-2, and Game 5s are always your key. So, that's the thing. Can they keep on – can the Penguins keep their defense going? I mean, they held Ovechkin to no shots in the third period last night. That's just inconceivable to me. They looked at the heat maps for last night's game, and the Penguins got their chances are all in front of the net, all close in. It's amazing how they kept the Capitals away from the net last night.
Defensively, yeah, they were outstanding. That's probably the best game defensively that they had, probably all playoffs. Actually, I think that even beats any game against the Flyers. They were just if you guys don't follow Jesse Marshall on Twitter, who writes for The Athletic. He did a great piece on how the Penguins played defensively, and he included a lot of video. And they were pushing the Capitals to the outside. They wouldn't give them any good looks. They had 3 shots on net in the third period. Like, that's textbook shutdown defense.
I absolutely agree, Hunter. You're right on point there. The defense was there for the Penguins to win a really key Game 4 for them to tie this series back up. Did you think that Washington really missed Tom Wilson? What was the impact without him in the lineup? Was that a reason why Ovechkin disappeared? I mean, and that, I think that's a ridiculous question, personally, because this is Tom Wilson.
I know.
Alex Ovechkin did not disappear because Tom Wilson is not on his line. But was that a factor in Game 4?
Well, the Penguins, well, Caps fans will tell you it was his best season yet, and he had 35 points. Well, that is true, but I mean, like,
I wanna know.
this isn't Jake Guentzel on the top line, people. I think the biggest
Hunter, I want to know your opinion, not Twitter.
Yeah, I know. My opinion. Well, I think the Capitals screwed up by replacing him on the top line. They put Devontae Smith-Pelly up there. I mean, like, okay, maybe a decent bottom 6 forward. You can play him on your fourth line. But that's not a guy who you put up on the top line with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov. I think Ryan Wilson from Hockey Buzz, he tracked it. They got out-attempted by the Penguins 21-6 for shot attempts that whole game. That's awful. And Barry Trotz didn't even try to adjust it. He didn't even take him off the top line. At least put someone up there like Jacob Vrana, who's actually not a bad player. He's a young player on their team. He's actually a pretty decent player. It'll be interesting to see if he makes adjustments tonight. Barry Trotz has really not been known for that during his coaching career. He really honestly doesn't make too many adjustments, unlike Mike Sullivan, who will. But, yeah, I think the biggest thing for Ovechkin, like, just take Devontae Smith-Hulley off and put someone else up there. Like Verano, or maybe move Oshie or something. You can't keep putting him up there. I think that was honestly one of the biggest reasons.
Sorry, Tom. I was just going to say, Hunter, I'm glad you bring up Barry Trotz and his adjustments, because it seems like every time he makes an adjustment, it's in a panic mode. He doesn't make any tinkering moves in the playoffs. You know, the Penguins didn't have to panic in Game 4, but you saw Mike Sullivan make adjustments. He changed his lines up just a little bit. He put Hornquist down with Evgeny Malkin on the second line. He split up his best defensive pair and put him with his bottom pairing to make the defense overall stronger in Game 4. And we saw the result. The defense was much better. Sullivan makes these small little adjustments along the way, and it seems like Trotz waits until he's in panic mode, and then it screams panic mode to his team and his players when he does make an adjustment, like last year when he put Alex Ovechkin on the third line.
Yeah. It just goes to show how good of a coach Mike Sullivan is, and how he's just underrated by, I think, so many people. I think he's one of the five best coaches in hockey right now. I don't think there's any question about that. He's probably up there. I think Tom would agree that he's up there with Quenneville and some Laviolette, I'd say, who's also really good. It's hard to rate really good coaches, because some of them are just not so good. But he's so good at making these little adjustments, like you said. And Barry Trotz, I think I thought always for his whole career that he's been overrated. And, you know, especially if they don't win this series, there's no way he comes back. And I think my big question is, would anyone hire him next year after all, like, what's happened with his in Nashville and Washington? Of course, if he wins this series, you know, that'll boost up his reputation a lot. But, you know, like, these next 2 to 3 games, this is it for him in regards to, you know, if he's going to come back or if he's gone.
Well, I think he's got to get that team to the finals if he's going to bolster his reputation. Just getting past the Penguins isn't going to do it.
That's fair. That's fair to say. I think if they would play Tampa, I don't think they would get past the Lightning, especially with how they're beating up Boston. They just took both games in Boston, which is pretty hard to do. So, I think that's definitely a good point.
I don't think they beat the Lightning either. So I think Trotz still has trouble gaining any kind of reputation in the NHL because, yeah, I think he's going to miss the finals again. So
I think the Capitals, their upper management will probably be like, well, we just slayed the Dragons, so, I mean, you know, let's bring them back for another year just because we finally beat the Penguins for the first time, and they've beaten them 1 year. When was the year they beat the Penguins?
1994.
Okay. It was sometime in the 90s, but I know Ted Leonsis and Brian McGowan would be like, holy crap, we just won our Stanley Cup. We beat the Penguins. And then they'll probably have, like, and then they'll just bring him back because I think that's what reality will be. I really do.
How bad did losing Wilson kind of affect the Capitals' state of mind yesterday, though? I mean, 2 days ago.
Oh, yeah. You just see some comments coming out of that locker room. It's like, I read it on Twitter. These guys are robots, and they're going to defend their teammates no matter what. It happens almost everywhere. I mean, of course, you have TJ Oshie who says, well, you know, it's a little extreme. After he just said that, he said that refs have told him that, you know, well, you know, that guy's bigger than you, that he hit him in the head. Who gives a crap? And it's like, okay, you can say one good thing, but then say something stupid. And then you go out and you have a stupid play with Chris Letang at the end of the game when the puck's not even near him. It's like, you almost contradicted what you just said. What?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make any sense to me. But and then I'm sure Dave will get to this in a bit. I know he's not happy. yeah, Barry Trotz really defending this, you know, a good hockey play, shoulder to shoulder. I'm like, you know, I don't expect you to say anything different because people are always going to defend their players. That's not – but, like, you really, like, double down on it. It's like, what?
Actually, I have less respect for Trotz for even saying that. You look at the replay. I just look at the hit. Yeah, he goes in with his shoulder, but he's launching. Like, he practically left his skates. His skates were almost completely off the ice. I mean, he came in with his shoulder, with his forearm, right into the head. And, you know, even if I were, as a Blackhawks fan, if a Blackhawks player did that, I'd be saying the same thing. The suspension is earned. Because there's no room for that anywhere in hockey. And you really have to look at it. Look at what he did. Look at the action. He didn't. If he had stayed on his skates, yeah, it would have been a shoulder-to-shoulder hit. His right skate was completely off the ice, and he was on the toe of his left skate. And that just he loaded up and launched. And, just no call for that at all. And it's ridiculous to hear the people who are trying to defend it. Well, you either didn't see the hit or you're just being completely stupid because it was devastating and there was no call for it. He could have hit him cleanly. Who was the guy who got hit? I'm sorry, I forget the name.
Zach Aston Reese.
Aston Reese.
Who?
Zach Aston Reese.
Okay. Aston Reese, he's actually got his head down carrying the puck out of the zone. All right? Doesn't see Wilson. Wilson could have knocked him off his skates with a shoulder hit, and I would have applauded it. But, the way he went into it, the way he went into the hit, the way he launched at his head, there's no call for it. I mean, that's clearly crossing the line, and I don't know if 3 games was enough, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, if anyone who thinks it was a shoulder-to-shoulder hit, and I've seen plenty of people who do, they're being biased towards their own team, and, that fan base has defended Tom Wilson forever, just like some Penguins fans used to defend Matt Cook. And trust me, I saw plenty of it, even though I actually got sick and tired of Matt Cook after a while. But it's annoying just to see these people just not look at reality. It was just a bad hit. He elbowed him right in the face and not only gave him a broken jaw, he gave him a freaking concussion. If you really don't care about a player getting a concussion from that hit, then you are what's problem. You are a problem with – you are, like the league, are a part of the problem. I tweeted that the other night. Those people are part of the problem. And if you only care about concussions that happen to your player, then you know what? You're going to be pretty mad when the NHL gets boned in the pending concussion lawsuit because they are going to get killed, and it's going to be bad.
Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't happened already.
It's coming. It's only a matter of time before it comes.
Seeing how long the football players have been in the battle – ex-NFL players have been in the battle with the league over concussion and CTE diagnoses. I'm surprised this hasn't already happened in hockey. But, as I say, that could have been a clean hit.
Yeah.
Because Aston Reese had his head down. Never saw Wilson. That could have been a clean hit, but it wasn't. So...
Mm-hmm.
And that's Wilson's fault. He made the choice.
Yeah, exactly. It's just I don't understand it.
You guys bring up great points about the hit. Moving forward, though, I think however you see the hit, whether you agree with it or not, the thing that I think we can all agree on, and I absolutely agree that it was an awful hit. I'm not trying to play devil's advocate with that. What I'm saying is this is adversity that the Capitals are going through, and I really don't know if they can overcome it again, because mentally, where is this team? You already mentioned TJ Oshie and his comments, Hunter, and then taking a run at Letang at the end of the game. I thought he lost his cool. Nicholas Backstrom lost his cool, broke his stick after losing game four, reportedly yelled,
yep.
F this league. F this league.
Yeah.
The league didn't lose you game four. You lost game four. Brandon Holtby questioned the non-goaltender interference call in game four on Friday afternoon. And that was just absurd to think that there was goaltender interference on that call.
Wait, I missed
goal.
That. He actually said that?
Matt Gajka tweeted it out that Holtby was
God.
Questioning. And the point I want to make here before we move on is, when they won the game two and game three, the Capitals, you know, they looked like they were a different team. They looked like they were ready to move past the Penguins. And now they run into this speed bump where they lose Tom Wilson, a guy that shouldn't be intricate to their team, but they lose him for three games and they want to crumble up and just whine about it. They want to crumble up and say, oh, you know, the league is being unfair to us. That's not the sign of a champion. That is not a team that's going to get past the Penguins.
It's a loser. What Oshie did, it's a loser mentality. It's plagued that organization, basically their entire existence. They haven't made a conference final in, what is it, 1997 when they got
20,
swept
20
by
years.
The Red Wings? 20 years. Yeah, they got swept by Detroit back the year when I was freaking born. It's been that long. Like, the fact that Braden Holtby would even question that, it's like, dude, what are you looking at, man? Like, Brooks Orpik mauled Hornquist to the ice. That had no bearing on that goal. Malkin just made a great play to dive and put the puck over the net. If that was goaltender interference, I think people would have called the league and asked for an explanation or probably even
Holtby said that Hornquist was kept using the stick and tapping his pads, kept going at his pads with a stick. That's kind of
Brett
was complaining about.
Yeah, Brett Connolly slashed Matt Murray in game two. So yeah, okay, Braden Holtby, that's nice. I mean, I don't get it. You know, if they gotta overcome this garbage if they really wanna, you know, slay the dragon and beat a team that has literally owned their franchise for their entire basically existence.
And I'm not sure they have the mental capacity to do it. I think the Wilson suspension changed the complexion of this series, and really that's the Capitals' fault. They're letting it change
the
complexion of this series.
The hell of it is, Dave, if they would just The talent on that team is deep, and if they would realize that instead of worrying about all these other ancillary, you know, outside influences and just come down and recognize that they are talented and there's a lot they can do, they'd probably be in a lot better shape.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, things happen. You're going to play 20, 25 postseason games. It doesn't go your way every night. You got to come back and bounce back in the next playoff game. And maybe they'll do that. Maybe Washington will come out tonight in front of their home crowd and have an excellent performance. But I'm not banking on that the way that they're talking to the media and reacting to some of the adversity they've gone through in game four.
It very well could happen. Yeah, I'm not saying that at all. And the Penguins are doing this in this series, and they're beating them. It's hilarious. They've been not to change the subject, but they've been such a one line team, and they've won two games against them with just basically two or three players scoring almost every goal. It's actually kind of hilarious how the Penguins have won two games in this series, being carried by really two or three players. It really is something.
That's the last point I wanted to hit upon, that Sidney Crosby has been on the ice for all 10 of Pittsburgh's goals in the second round. Him and Gensel are absolutely on fire. I mean, their chemistry right now is off the charts. Problem is, nobody else is scoring. Evgeny Malkin got the power play goal. Hopefully that gets the second line going in game five, but Where's Phil Kessel? Where's Derek Brassard? I'm blue in the face asking that question. But until those guys get going, then the Penguins are they're not in trouble because Crosby and Gensel are on such a hot streak. But you can only last so long with one line carrying you. They've got to have more scoring in the bottom nine, and especially with Kessel and Brassard's lines in the bottom six.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's really just sad to watch Phil Kessel right now, guys. I feel for him. You know, I think everyone is agreeing that, you know, he's hurt. It looks actually like I'm not a doctor. I'm not close to a doctor. It's just when Phil Kessel can't even shoot the puck, he's whiffing on pucks. It's like, okay, yeah, something's wrong, either like lower body or something. You know, they've cut to him a few times, like down the stretch of the season in the playoffs, and he's been clutching his midsection, and it's been like, what is it? Is it like a rib injury? Do you have maybe like a what down there? I've heard there's like a potentially a sports hernia injury, which would what I've read on that is potentially an awful injury to play through. I mean, they're never going to scratch him or take him off the top power play, but I mean, it's just sad watching him right now because that is not the Phil Kessel that we've seen from the past two playoff runs. It's really just a sad sight to see, everyone.
Yeah, Hunter, I agree with you that with your speculation that he doesn't seem right. Something does seem to be bothering him. Last question of this conversation, guys, to Tom. Hunter, you say they're never going to scratch him, but Tom, I mean, how long do you go with a star player when he's obviously not 100%, not himself? How long can you go with that guy in the lineup?
Well, at some point, you really can't go very long with him. He's not giving you anything. Giving you anything that a much lesser player isn't going to give you a healthy player isn't going to give you by putting him on the ice. You got to give him a chance to sit, even though this is the playoffs. I think you got to give him a chance. If he is hurting, you got to give him a chance to recover a little bit at least. I don't know what the injury would be, though. So, you know, it's speculation on how long it would take him to make enough recovery to be able to play effectively. But if he's that bad, no, you can't keep him out there. You've got to do something, whether he's your star or not. You got to do something to change this up because, you're not going to live with, you're not going to live
line.
With Crosby, and, it's just not going to happen.
I agree, and as I said, there's plenty of storylines to follow as we head into Game 5, and hopefully Sammy's not going to be able to join us today. Hopefully she can join us next week to recap the series. But that's all for our hockey discussion. If you do want to make another point, something that we didn't get to, give us a call, 516-387-1417. We'll get you on the air. You can also tweet at us, at WKD Sports Huddle. We're going to take a quick break here on Weekend Sports Huddle. When we come back, last night was an historic night for the MLB. First, Albert Pujols reached another milestone. We'll reveal what it was after the commercial.
Are you looking for a fun and creative way to enjoy fitness? Whether for health, wellness, or as a hobby, KD Sunshine Hoops is the answer. Affordable, custom-made by hand hula hoops, fitness hoops, art pieces, hoop dancing videos and advice are available at www.katiesunshinehoops.com.
Welcome back to WRSP Radio's Weekend Sports Huddle with Tom Pollan, Hunter Hodes. I'm Dave Holcomb. Just broke down the Penguins Capitals playoff series, Game 5 tonight after the Kentucky Derby. I'm really looking forward to both of those events on NBC. Well, plenty to talk about here in the second half hour. We're going to talk some baseball and hopefully get to some Ben Roethlisberger comments at the very end of our show. But first, Albert Pujols making some more history tonight, or last night, guys. Singled in the fifth inning against the Mariners to join the 3,000 hit club. He becomes the sixth player with 500 home runs and 3,000 hits. That's a very exclusive club. And Pujols is actually already a member of an even more exclusive club. He has 600 home runs 3,000 hits now. He's the fourth player to reach that milestone. Hunter, could you name the other three guys in the 600, 3,000 club?
All right, I can try. Barry Bonds.
No.
Is that one of them?
That's one.
Oh,
wrong.
Wow, I thought for sure Barry Bonds would be up there. Damn.
He did not have 3,000 hits. He finished with, I believe, 2986, something like that.
Right.
He was very
He fell just short.
I thought for sure he was one of them. I wasn't sure. Oh, man. All right, now I'm just probably going to be guessing here. I don't think the Babe. Was
Hunter,
one of
you're
them,
killing
was
me.
Was the Babe
no.
one of them?
No. The Babe
damn.
Did not get 3,000 hits.
No.
He was just short as well. He had like 2,800 or 2,900 hits.
Yeah.
Hank Aaron.
Ding, 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 ding.
Hey, you got one.
I got Hank. Okay, I got him.
You got Hank.
I got one of them. crap. man, I can't get the other two.
Center fielder.
Have nicknames. Both have pretty famous nicknames.
Okay, let me see here. Willie Mays.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Ding, 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 ding.
I'm telling you, that's something.
Yeah. Hey, give me the other position. What is it?
Yeah, this guy is not an old guy. He played in our generation. He played shortstop and third base.
Our generation, not crap.
He shares a nickname with a quarterback in the NFL, and this quarterback should not go by this nickname because this nickname is his nickname.
Okay. Oh man, now I'm like stuck. I don't think I can do it. Damn it.
Alex Rodriguez.
A-Rod. I should have.
You missed the easy one.
I mean, you missed
the lay-in.
I should have had that.
That was the puck two feet out, empty net, and you hit the post.
I can't.
My gosh.
A-Rod, that was bad. Yeah. Hey, but I got Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, so, you know. I was going to say.
All right, who are the other two who hit 500 and 3,000 hits?
This is much tougher.
Yeah. I can't be the ones I said.
One of them got it in 2005. I remember watching his 3,000th hit.
2005.
I was 14, but you were only like 6, so.
I was 8.
8, whatever.
Man.
They were both Orioles for a while.
Orioles?
Yeah.
I mean,
so, yeah.
Is it Cal Ripken?
No.
Ripken did not get 500 home runs.
Ripken didn't get 500 home runs in his dreams. Come on.
I actually don't know that one then, Dave. Give me the name.
Rafael Palmeiro was one. And
yeah.
The other one was Eddie Murray. I would have
Eddie
been
Murray,
impressed
yeah.
if you got Eddie Murray.
I wasn't going to get those, Dave. I wasn't.
I figured not. But, yeah, the point
it's
here is...
It's good that wasn't one of your finals.
Oh.
Yeah. Good thing it wasn't on your exam this morning.
I know. But I got Willie Mays and I got Hank Aaron, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Okay. But
I'm relieved,
the point
actually.
Is,
yeah.
I don't, you know, those are some of the best players to ever play. You should know them. The point I'm trying to make, guys, is Pujols is joining a very exclusive club with his 3,000th hit. And, Tom, I know that one of the questions that you want to ask us and our audience, again, we want to make you a part of the show, give us a call, 516-387-1417, is why haven't we talked more about Pujols and his accomplishments? It seems like it was just yesterday we were talking about him reaching 3,000 hits, and And this is something that we used to have, you know, watch lists for. You know, he's up to 2,997 and 98 and 99, but that really hasn't happened with any of Pujols' accomplishments: 500 home runs, 600 home runs, and now 3,000 hits.
You know, the Major League Baseball website, MLB.com, actually, you know, they pay pretty close attention to it. But if you look at, like, ESPN or any of the network sites, you know more about the NBA playoffs than you do about Albert Pujols, you know, making these exclusive, very tough-to-reach numbers. And the talent that's going into it, and I still hold that, you know, the Angels, kind of like the White Sox here in Chicago, the Angels are that other team that plays, you know, in the Los Angeles area, well, Anaheim. But, you know, the Dodgers get all the ink out there. And the Angels have never really gotten the attention. And I think that's part of the problem. But because even though he was a St. Louis Cardinal, and Cubs fans, forgive me for this, but, you know, the guy is immensely talented, and he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Not that I enjoyed watching him for the first half of his career.
I don't think Dave did either, Tom, considering, you know, he probably always torched the Pirates. But, yeah, he was
at that point. At that point, Hunter, the Pirates weren't winning anything. So I enjoyed watching Albert Pujols.
I was used to, when I played an MLB video game when I was a kid, I'd pick the Cardinals just to hit with him. And, yeah, he was a god in that game, too. So, yeah, it was great. You know, it's a shame he went to the Angels because they've wasted, like, the bottom half of his career since they, like, never go to the playoffs. Him and Mike Trout, feel bad for that guy, too. But, yeah, Albert Pujols, he always seems to be underrated by so many people. Definitely a first-ballot Hall of Famer in my book as well. I loved growing up watching him because it almost seemed like nightly he would hit a home run. So, I love that guy.
Yeah, so, but that's the thing, and this, one of the points that I was looking at, I was kind of doing some research, just kind of looking at some numbers last night. If you look at the active list, this is the last time this is going to be happening for a while. Either 500 home runs or 3,000 hits. I don't think we're going to see this in a long time, guys. I'm not quite sure why, but, I mean, right now, well, I mean, the active leader in hits actually retired the other day. Let's give a shout-out to Ichiro Suzuki for the incredible career that he had. But he's heading up to the front office in the Mariners front office. So his career is over, but, you know, incredible career by him, and definitely a guy who we're going to be seeing in the Hall of Fame in 5 years. But I'm calling it up right now. There aren't a lot of guys who are going to be making this list. You got Adrian Beltre, who's number two on the active list and number one on the active list now. But Miguel Cabrera is at 2,666 hits. Cano's at 2,409 mm-hmm. hits. You know, and all these players are over 30. You know, the next one that you really have who you could say maybe still has a, you know, is going to make a run at this at some point are probably Trout and maybe Altuve and Bryce Harper. But
I think Stanton could.
Well,
who
it's possible. Let me see where he is.
Giancarlo.
The thing is, let me look to see where he is on this list.
Yeah. He's injured a lot. That's the thing. Or has been.
That's true.
He's got 990 hits. He's 28.
Yep, I just found it.
Okay,
he's 28, 990 hits. He is not going to get 3,000 hits, guys.
Yeah, never mind. Never mind.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean,
I mean, this is a great point, Tom. That you're right. I did not realize this. I think Miguel Cabrera and Robinson Cano have the best shot, and they're both already 35. They're Cabrera is, you said, 2,666. So he's, you know, three more seasons of 150 hits, or if he holds on until his 40s, he's got maybe 100 hits per season. That's doable, but.
Yes, it is doable.
He's heading to the DL this week,
right?
That one's doable. I think if he wants to reach it and wants to play, I think he can. I think he can do it. And Cano is at just over 2,400 at 35, and he's been averaging about 150 hits as well, more than 150. 166 is his lowest in the last. 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if he continues that pace, but his pace dropped off last year. He was
right.
More like a 180 hit guy, and then last year he dropped to 166. So I'm not great at math either. Hunter said that he's not good at math. So if he averages 150 per season, he still needs six more seasons. He's at 2,400 right now, and he's 35. So he's got a shot. We've seen some guys last into their 40s and reach this milestone in their early 40s, but you don't know at what age he starts to break down. You don't know if he has the desire to play until he's 40. But other than Cano and Cabrera, that's really it for a while. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, Tom. I mean, you're not going to see this happen. I think people really should be celebrating this more. Because the drop-off between where Pujols is and where a lot of his competition is, I mean, Jose Reyes is at 2,100 hits, but he's not going to make it.
No.
Nick Marchesius hasn't played top-rate baseball in a long time.
Nick Marchesius?
Nick Marchesius is number 7 on the active list in hits.
What? Holy crap.
Yeah. So, it's really, you really wonder, this is going to become a very rare accomplishment once these guys retire. You're just not going to see it. So, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, but let's really celebrate what Pujols has done. This is an incredibly difficult thing to be able to put the ball in play as much as he does, to hit as many home runs as he has, and you know to be a pure hitter, to not just hit home runs, but to just be a pure hitter, and that's what he's accomplished in his career.
Pujols is the 32nd player ever to reach 3,000 hits, so that by itself is a great accomplishment. And next week, Hunter, we're going to ask you to name the other 31 guys who are in their 3,000
hits. And
as we said, for him to get
not even
600 home runs with the 3,000 hits is
I can name a lot more than you could, Hunter.
You could name, like, 5.
Oh, give me a break. Oh, God.
I can get pretty close to all of them, Hunter. I bet I could get 25.
No way.
Yeah, way.
Oh, my God. I wish, you know, didn't Josh Hamilton used to have, didn't he get, like, 600, 500 home runs before he started going down the road?
No,
serious?
He hit 500 home runs in one home run derby, but not in a game.
Yeah. That was, how many does he have? He had like, I don't know how much he has.
I'm going to guess he has like 300.
300. I thought it was.
He doesn't have that.
Okay,
many.
Yeah.
He
my bad.
200.
I'm stupid.
Wow, I was even high.
Don't mind me.
Home
don't mind
stack.
Me. I'm stupid.
Okay.
Don't mind me. I'm stupid.
Glad we've established that now.
Sorry.
That he's stupid?
You're
sorry,
right. Yeah.
Sorry. My bad.
We have a tweet from Gary to wrap up our Pujols conversation. Gary says, "Don't you think Pujols' recognition problem is related to him playing on the West Coast for Angels?" Yes, Gary, we absolutely agree.
Absolutely.
And then he goes on to say, "Just not enough prime TV opportunities plus games are too late for most fans to even see accomplishments until the next day. Mike Trout has same problems."
Yeah.
His relative standing would be much higher if he played on East Coast or for Chicago. And most people don't even know that Robinson Cano is even still playing. Wow, that's quite enough.
That is actually
that
probably
last,
true considering he plays in Seattle.
You know, that is a great point.
Yeah.
And he's right. He's absolutely right. But that's the thing. That happens in all sports, though. Gary, it happens college football. You know, it doesn't happen for NFL because you're seeing all the games together, but college football, basketball, pro and college, hockey, you know, you very rarely get a good look at the West Coast teams because the games start so late that everybody, you know, they're getting ready to go to bed or, you know, it's not on their minds at that time of night. So,
yeah,
that definitely affects how Pujols is being looked at.
Who wants to watch the Angels? No one? Yeah. I don't think anyone would
Hunter,
want to watch
Hunter, they have one of the most exciting players in the game right now, Shohei Ohtani.
I know.
Yeah, they do, Hunter. I mean, a lot of people want to watch
and
him.
Mike Trout.
And they're in first place.
They're tied first place with the Astros.
Yeah, yeah. Then we all know the inevitable happens. I feel so bad for Mike Trout.
You know, Hunter, just because each season is a different season.
I want to see the Angels do something with Mike Trout. I want to see them do something. Dave would agree with me. Dave, don't they waste Mike Trout out there? Come on. They don't even make the playoffs with him.
They've made the playoffs with Mike Trout, 2014. They
won
100 games.
I know, but it's kind of the same with the Nationals, honestly. They've kind of wasted Bryce Harper. So, I mean, do I have a lot of room to talk? Probably not.
I mean,
you know, I feel bad
for
Mike Trout.
I don't want to call you stupid again, Hunter. We already did that once today, but
myself stupid.
Oh, gosh. I don't like the whole we're wasting a player's career notion. You know, it's very hard to win a championship. Only one team wins. Only eight teams get to go to the playoffs. 10 teams, I guess, in baseball with the extra wild card team.
Yeah.
So it's hard
yeah.
to get there. You know, the Angels, their fan base, does not feel like they're wasting them. Their fan base loves going to watch Mike Trout.
Of course.
You know,
that's 41,000 fans out there last night.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, they love watching Albert Pujols right now too. So, if you want to say somebody's wasting someone's career, I think it has to be much more. Egregious than the Angels and Mike Trout. But let's move on, guys.
Okay.
We have a few other things that we want to talk about in the last 10 minutes. Today's show is brought to you by author Mark Visacchio. Learn the secret of the human mind and the laws of the universe that will guide you towards wealth and health. Learn more at www.marcosacchio.com. And we might have time for one caller if you want to call in real quick, 516-387-1417. But definitely find us on Twitter during the week at WKD Sports Huddle and on Facebook. Join the conversation there. We have lots of Facebook Lives after we have a Facebook Live after every Penguin game and a couple other ones as well during the week. So join us on Facebook, search Weekend Sports Huddle. But the final few minutes, guys, another milestone in baseball yesterday. The Los Angeles Dodgers recorded their first combined no-hitter last night, no-hitting the San Diego Padres in a game that was played in Mexico. So you know, Mexicans in attendance for the game probably think that there's a no-hitter every game. But that's obviously not how Major League Baseball works. But they saw some great history last night.
Well, and definitely. And, you know, just a difficult thing to do. I mean, it's difficult enough for one guy to go through and no-hit a team. But to expect four different pitchers to go out and be throwing such good stuff that they can't be touched, I mean, that's an incredible accomplishment. But my question to you and Hunter is, considering how many pitchers, how few pitchers that, you know, either can't go nine innings or aren't allowed to go nine innings anymore, how do you think this could be a more common thing in baseball?
I think so. It's actually happened. If my memory serves me right, and I don't think I'm stupid on this one, so it's happened a little frequently over the past couple seasons. I know the Phillies. I specifically remember that one had one a few years ago. I think it was with Cole Hamels. Am I correct with that? Cole Hamels?
Yes. You are correct.
Cole Hamels. Yes. I got that right. So I remember that one because, yeah, I remember getting a notification about it. And then I know I saw one last season. I can't remember. I'd have to look it up in the season before. But I do think we are going to have some because a lot of these pitchers aren't going to pitch over 100 to 110 pitches on most nights in the regular season. Because I mean, they're going to like probably save up their arm, you know, in case if they're on a good team, to have it ready for the playoffs, of course. So they won't do it really unless they really need to. So I think it's going to be a lot more frequent in the coming years.
Yeah, I agree with Hunter, and I wouldn't say it's going to be a common occurrence. I mean, it's been almost 4 years since the last one, but yeah, I do think that it's becoming more and more likely because of what Hunter said that pitchers really don't pitch complete games anymore. But speaking of complete games, you guys see Gerrit Cole's complete game last night? 16 strikeouts?
Oh, God, 16 strikeouts, yeah.
Beautiful.
I wasn't going to bring that up, guys. I was going to save you from that one, but here you bring it up on yourself.
I will always root for Gerrit Cole and Andrew McCutchen, two of my favorite players.
There you go.
And McCutchen is off to his typical slow start. April has not been kind to him in his career. But Gerrit Cole is pitching very well for the Astros, and I'm happy to see it.
Tom, you want to know what else will happen this week for the poor Pirates? My Nationals swept them in four games.
How is it rooting for Washington in one sport and Pittsburgh in the other, and the two cities are playing each other at the same time in both sports? How does that work out for you?
It was weird. It was actually kind of weird how they lined up. The Nationals Twitter account kept tweeting, well, one down, one to go. And I'd be like, oh, stop tweeting that. But, I've always said, people have so many times have asked me, how are you a Nationals fan, but a Penguins and a Steelers fan? One, I never got into the Pirates. Two, I would never root for the Pirates if I could because of the owner and what everything that's going on. And three, the Nationals were the first baseball game that I went to. So, I mean, that's why they're my team. So, but yeah, my Nationals have turned it around a bit. I'm kind of happy. They've won six in a row, and they're climbing up. It was a very slow start this season, a lot slower than I thought. But hopefully they're out of it.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of our preseason picks here, we thought, these were going to be more cut and dried and maybe we'd have more wild card action. But it seems like, between the Nationals, the Cubs, and the Dodgers, it's been a struggle for all three of our consensus preseason picks to get off the ground and be moving this year.
What is going on with the Cubs, Tom? Is anything wrong with them?
It's a lot of it is the pitching. The starting pitching has not been effective. Yu Darvish has struggled the entire season. They're still trying to kind of figure out what's going on with Yu Darvish, because, you know, he's really at this point where, I mean, for what he signed for what he's done in the past, you don't expect to see this out of him. Now, there's been a lot of call lately that maybe it's Wilson Contreras that, you know, Darvish doesn't have his regular catcher with Chris Jimenez. The Cubs cut him in spring training, and they worked together in 2014, but Madden's kind of dismissed that and said, well, you know, Contreras worked with him in the first couple of games. They seem fine. But, I mean, Darvish is he's just getting hit. It seems like one inning will kill him, or one little piece of adversity gets him. He's given up 31 hits and 22 runs in 30 innings. So it's just, it's tough to try and figure out anymore is how to straighten him out. He's also given up 16 walks. So, I mean, it's incredible. Right now, the best pitcher on the Cubs staff has been their number five starter, Tyler Chatwood. So, and they're not scoring a lot of runs. If they're not playing the Brewers, it seems like they're not scoring a lot of runs. So, you know, that's the other problem.
Well, it's been inconsistent. Sorry, go ahead. Finish, Tom.
Oh, I say they've won 7 of 8 against the Brewers so far this year. It kind of turns them into pretenders from contenders, but they haven't been as effective against anybody else.
Well, it's been a jumble at the top of the National League Central with all the top four teams within 2 games of each other. The Pirates started the week in first place and then lost 4 in a row to the Nationals and dropped all the way to fourth. So that's how tight it is in the National League Central. Lots of inconsistency and great play at times, but very inconsistent. That'll be a very interesting division, I think, all summer long. The Pirates did lose 4 straight, but Nick Kingman won his 2nd game last night. He debuted
King
on
Ham.
Sunday through 7. Kingman.
Kingham.
Yeah, you're right. Kingham throwing 7 shutout innings on Sunday in his debut, had a perfect game into the 7th inning. So that was very exciting for the Pirates, and they obviously hope that will continue. And we're out of time, guys, so we're going to have to talk about Kingham after I get his name right next week. And there'll be plenty also to talk about with Big Ben, it looks like, because he had some comments about drafting Mason Rudolph. Hope to get to that
next week. For crying out loud, I mean, the guy's an established quarterback, but yeah, you know, hopefully we'll get to it next week.
Stop talking.
Yeah, it started out innocent, and then it seemed like he kept talking, and it got a little bit more controversial.
Hall of Fame quarterback complaining about a rookie just coming in.
He
just has to know when to shut up. Just know when to shut up.
And we're out of time. We're out of time, Hunter. So we all have to shut up because there's no more time in this episode.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining, everybody. Today's show brought to you by author Marco Sacchio. Learn the secret of the human mind and the laws of the universe that will guide you towards wealth and health. Learn more at www.marcosacchio.com. Follow us on Twitter at WKD Sports Huddle. Follow us on Facebook, search Weekend Sports Huddle. We'll be back next Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time.